Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time once again to meet our community, the Hispanic business community here in Orange County, powered by the Orange County Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And today, we're privileged to have with us, I'm going to try a little Spanish, is this El Jefe? Are you the big guy here?
I guess so. That's one of the nicer things people
call. Ruben Franco, welcome, with a very special guest today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hey, welcome, everybody. Thanks for being on our podcast, our community podcast. We called our community is your community, so we just want to reach out to our community. We think we have a fabulous community here in Orange County, and we're blessed to be here at UCI. And we're blessed to have a great guest today, Enrico Lopez-Yanez, who's our principal pops conductor here at the Pacific Symphony, among other things. But we like to, you know, kind of usually start our podcast just by you telling us a little bit about yourself personally.
Oh, sure.
So just give us a little bit of background, because I'm not sure everybody knows who you are, where you came from, you know, where you were raised and where you went to school, and all the kind of good stuff.
Happy to. Well, I grew up primarily in San Diego, so that was, I was SoCal raised
there, okay.
And went to high school there, but then up to UCLA for college, where I studied trumpet.
Go Bruins.
Go, yeah. Bruins. Yeah. I came from a very musical family. So my mom is a pianist and my father's an opera singer. So music was always a part of my upbringing, a part of everything I did. We, when I was young enough, had the fortune of traveling the world with my dad, and we went everywhere that he did to perform. And he sang a lot in Europe, in Australia, North and South America, Asia, everywhere from the Metropolitan Opera to the Sydney Opera House. I mean, all the major places around the world. So that was kind of my daycare growing up, was sitting in the backstage of these major concert halls and watching these huge productions come to life. My mom was my first music teacher. She taught me piano starting at 5. And as soon as I was old enough to not take piano lessons from her, I insisted that be the case, because I got so tired of my mom yelling from across the house, correcting my piano playing. And so that's when I switched to the trumpet.
And how old were you there when you...
That was in fifth grade.
So fifth grade, okay.
Yeah, part of the fifth grade band, learned the trumpet. And a year later, I had also always wanted to play drums, but my mom was like, let's stick with maybe the more serious of the instruments. Mm. So let's start with trumpet and see how that goes. A year later, my parents separated, and my dad's sort of parting gift to my mom was to buy me a drum set that was left at her house for me to learn. And so I started, you know, playing in rock bands and oldies groups. And on the trumpet, I played everything from mariachi to klezmer to oldies and jazz, and just a really rich plethora of different styles of music.
Right.
And little did I know that that would eventually translate to what I do now as a pops conductor, which is leading orchestras in all the non-classical genres. So it's collaborating with rock artists, with hip hop, with gospel choirs, with jazz ensembles. And that sort of musical upbringing just happened to be what I loved in my childhood. I did that all throughout college. I went to UCLA for trumpet, and also got a master's there in trumpet, and then had been exploring conducting a little bit on the side and realized, yeah, I think that's what I want to go into. And so then I went to the University of Maryland outside of DC to get my degrees in conducting. And my first job was with the Omaha Symphony. I won their assistant conductor position. A few years later, won a position down with Nashville Symphony and eventually became their principal pops conductor. And now I have the fortune of working with a whole bunch of orchestras. I'm wrapping up my time in Nashville. I have, of course, the principal pops position here with Pacific Symphony, but also am the principal pops conductor of the Detroit Symphony, the principal conductor of the Dallas Symphony Presents, and the principal guest conductor for pops at the Indianapolis Symphony.
Well, how do you get the inspiration from being a musician to wanting to be a conductor? I mean, how do you take that leap? What inspired you to do that?
Sure. One is that I was always fascinated by conductors. I mean, there are pictures of me as a two-year-old standing on our fireplace in the house with a pencil, insisting that my parents sing and be my choir while I was conducting them.
Okay.
So there was some interest there from a young age, but I think part of it developed then in high school and college when I had the first opportunity to actually get some experience conducting. I went to Poway High School down in the North County, and while I was there, I was the teaching assistant for the orchestra, and my band director and orchestra conductor Mike Cook asked if I wanted to conduct a piece on the final concert. So the first thing I ever conducted was the soundtrack to Spider-Man, which had just come out, Danny Elfman score.
Okay.
And it was amazing. I had so much fun. I got to choose that piece and conduct it on the final concert. And then at UCLA, I started taking all the conducting classes they had. So choral conductor, choral conducting, wind ensemble conducting classes. But the thing I thought might interest me was opera, since that's what I had seen my dad do and all these great conductors.
Right.
And so at Maryland, I tried as, you know, to be as involved in the opera program as possible. I did summer festivals in opera over in Europe and some in Latin America and here in the United States. And it wasn't until I got to Omaha that I even witnessed my first Pops show with an orchestra. I didn't know that was a thing. So once I got there and saw the orchestra doing music of the Beatles, music of Journey, music of, you know, all these, you know, Frank Sinatra, music that I had heard on the radio when my mom was driving us to school every morning. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know orchestras do this. And that's when I was like, I need to try this out. I need to see what's going on here. And I fell in love with it. Just the fact that my perception of what an orchestra could do had completely been blown out of the water. And the fact that these musicians are, you know, classically trained, highest caliber of performers, and then blend all these genres and really enhance what you may have heard on the radio growing up to new levels. I mean, it's a completely different experience to hear a song by Aerosmith or Trisha Yearwood or whatever artist it may be. And now you tack on an 80 to 100 piece orchestra and the colors that are created, the type of, you know, new sounds that you can create and the way you can bring to life those hits is really magical. And that's something I wanted to figure out and wanted to be involved in.
Wow. So you were in your early 20s when that kind of, that flipped there. That
exactly.
Switch. Okay.
That's right.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you've gotten to work with just some incredible people, right? Like who was the most, what sticks out to you? Like, I know you've worked with some great people, but like,
I've had the great fortune of working with a lot of great artists from different genres. I mean, in Nashville, we've done obviously a lot of country stars. Mm-hmm. I've worked with Dolly Parton, with Trisha Yearwood, Jennifer Nettles, Kelly Pickler, Kelsey Ballerini, Toby Keith, rock artists from Kenny Loggins all the way through to Jefferson Starship and contemporary groups like Portugal the Man, rap and hip hop artists like Nas and Common, gospel singers like CeCe Winans, or, you know, soul and R&B like Patti LaBelle, Gladys Knight. I mean, Kenny G, just kind of all different genres and different artists. I feel very, very lucky.
Wow. Yeah. Is there somebody you haven't worked with yet that you...
There are
bucket,
so
like,
many.
What's like on your bucket list, I guess, for...
My nostalgia for, you know, childhood music was like 90s. So the boy bands like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC are high on my list. There are also a lot of contemporary artists who I think their music would lend itself really well. They're just maybe not yet at a place where they're looking to do symphony collaborations, but, you know, I think a Bruno Mars or Justin Timberlake show or, you know, things like that would be fantastic.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, what do you have coming up here at the symphony? You have
Well, speaking of 90s and early 2000s, this weekend's performances, Friday and Saturday, are of a show called La Vida Loca, which is all the greatest hits by primarily Latino artists in that time period. There was a huge Latin explosion in not only this country, but around the world, with artists like Ricky Martin, Enrique Iglesias, Shakira, Gloria Estefan, and that's the music that is on this weekend's concert. So we have all of their greatest hits. We have some of the artists that influenced music of the 90s, like Celia Cruz, and then some of the sort of artists that came out of that era as well, Despacito by Luis Fonsi and things like that. But really focus in primarily on, you know, the core of the 90s and early 2000s, Marc Anthony, J Lo, and these other artists that became so iconic and sort of rocked the pop world in a way that had never been seen before. And our cast of featured artists are all people who have worked and won Grammys with these artists. So Jackie Mendez, who's our lead female vocalist, she's currently on tour with Chayanne, but has toured with Juanes, with J-Lo, with Gloria Estefan. Ender Thomas is our male vocalist. He toured many, many decades with Yanni, but also co-wrote songs with Enrique Iglesias, with Ricky Martin. And then our percussionist is maybe the greatest Latin percussionist of all time, Luisito Quintero. Oh. And he has won over 60 Grammy Awards, having performed with everyone from Carlos Santana to Celia Cruz to Chick Corea, I mean, all the greats. And then we're welcoming back a trumpet player who played with us last season on the Arturo Sandoval show called Latin Fire. His name is José Sibaja. He was Ricky Martin's trumpet player for a decade, right during the height of the 90s and his big explosion. So the iconic recordings of Ricky at the Grammys that sort of blew everyone's mind, that was José Sibaja playing trumpet and all the crazy trumpet solos at that time.
And we got to hear him last year with you.
You got to hear him last year.
And it was awesome.
Yeah, and this year he'll be doing something that's really even more in his element than what we heard last year, which was a little more classical and jazz leaning. This year it's the, you know, wailing, screaming trumpet high notes stuff that, you know, I know that you're a fellow trumpet player.
Well, I tried. I wasn't very good, but I did have illusions of being Herb Alpert or
there you go.
Chuck Mangione, at least for 10 minutes.
There, perfect. But, yeah. Well, after this weekend, you'll maybe have aspirations to be José Sibaja because you'll hear some pretty impressive stuff from him this weekend.
I can imagine. So who were your influences when you're as a musician? Who influenced you as a musician?
Yeah, I mean, as a trumpet player, I was a huge fan, obviously, of Wynton Marsalis and people, you know, some of the greats like that. My teacher at UCLA, Jens Lindemann, who is still one of the leading soloists in the world. And actually, Jose, I was a big fan of and met when I was in college. So I've known him now for well over a decade. We met at the International Trumpet Guild competition up in Banff, Canada, when I was in undergrad. And then when I moved to Nashville, one of the first concerts I ever conducted was a Summer Parks concert, and Jose was subbing in the orchestra. So we reconnected after many years, and he happens to also be the trumpet professor at Vanderbilt University
Nashville.
Right there, Nashville. So we got reconnected, and then that's what started sort of the development of all these different concerts that we've done together ever since then.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then from the conducting side, who's been your influences there?
Man, I mean, a lot of the, you know, historic greats, people like Carlos Kleiber, and I was a very big fan of Carillon and Lauren Mazel, and now, you know, people like Gustavo Dudamel. Mm-hmm. And but for the pop side, I mean, people like Eric Kunzel, or you know, even some of the living people, Stephen Reinecke and Jack Everly, who I've had the great fortune of working with and collaborating with, and they are the inspirations that I have today of, you know, great conducting, great artistry, great arranging and composing. Also, that's a big aspect of pops conducting, is a lot of pops conductors also do arranging and writing, because this is very much a living art form. So we are creating new shows, new collaborations constantly, not just reinterpreting Beethoven or Mozart. So we are having to come up with new material for the orchestra all the time. So on this weekend's show, all of the arrangements were done by Jose and I. So you'll hear all brand new original arrangements of these classic 90s hits in a completely new way that was written just for this show.
Yeah, we don't think about how much work goes into, you just don't play, you know, show up and play.
That's right.
Right? You had to go. So how many hours does it take to even do something like that?
It took about a year to build this show.
Really?
Yeah. So I started writing charts for this over a year ago now. The show premiered in November in Indianapolis. But it was a year prior that the sort of concept came together. Okay. We started to choose the set list and then actually write the charts. And that's, of course, partially because that's not my full-time job. I'm on the road conducting constantly. So it's always, you know, when I have a few minutes here and there on a laptop in the lounge or on an airplane, I pull it out and start writing a few more notes down for the next arrangement.
Wow.
But, you know, it came together, and we have this incredible two-hour show that's super high energy. I mean, it is everything from encouraging people to dance the Macarena to sing and have a great time, you know, do the conga. And it's trying to capture that energy of the 90s and early 2000s Latin explosion, which was all about passion, dance, singing, and having a great time.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. Hey, I'm not going to try to run down all the different places you do the Pops Conductor, but why don't you tell us about some of the other organizations you're at? I know you said Nashville and some others, but...
Yeah, so I've been in Nashville now. This will be the end of my eighth season.
Okay.
So that's wrapping up there. The same time that I started here at Pacific Symphony, I also then started with the Dallas Symphony there. So I've been wrapping up my second season there, and then started a position this past year, or I guess a year ago, with Detroit, and then now this season with Indianapolis. So I jump primarily between those, but in between that, work with orchestras all over the country and North America. The week before, I was conducting in Toronto, and then work frequently at the Kennedy Center and other orchestras around the country, the Baltimore Symphony, so all over in the spare weeks that I have in between being here and at my other home orchestras.
What's kind of the coolest venue you've worked at?
They're all so unique. I mean, there are ones that are historic. You know, the Kennedy Center has a lot of history and tradition. Being from San Diego, I was really excited about conducting during the opening week of the Shell that they opened a few years back ago, the Rady Shell. I'll be back there again this month, actually, at the end of the month, doing two concerts with the San Diego Symphony. One is called Music of the Nights, which is all, you know, the great knighted composers like Elton John and, you know, British royalty of music, and then the Music of Dolly Parton concert, which we'll be opening our pop season with next season here. Dolly developed a brand new symphony show called Threads, and it connects all of her sort of songwriting history and story behind the great hits like Jolene and I Will Always Love You in a multimedia symphony experience. And so I premiered that with her in Nashville in March, and we'll be bringing it here to open the pop season in the fall.
And she was, you performed with Dolly.
She was, yeah, she was at the premiere in Nashville. She won't be going around for the other shows, but she appears in video. She created all this incredible behind-the-scenes video content that is a part of the show, where she talks about the inspiration to songs and sort of the stories behind a lot of the great hits that she wrote.
Yeah. We got to see her once at Dollywood from a distance.
But yes. She is such an icon, and I have just the utmost respect and admiration.
Paul, you had a question?
I want to ask one question here.
Yeah.
And before, I got to make a comment here. I am not a symphony girl, sorry to say.
That's okay.
Although I have an appreciation and years ago did sing in choirs and studied classical music and stuff here. What is the purpose of the Pops? Is it an entryway into exploring other classical music and symphony style creations? Or is it an expansion beyond the classic repertoire, Beethoven, Brahms, Tchaikovsky, whatever?
That's a great question. So the history of it is that it initially started off as an expansion and kind of introduction into classical music. Pops, back when the Boston Pops were at their peak, was sort of a light classic show. It was a collaboration with a guest artist, but some overtures by Rossini and, you know, some of the more popular-leaning Wagner overtures and things
like that. The William Tell overture.
The William Tell, exactly. Yeah, the Barber of Seville, the stuff you saw on Looney Tunes growing up. Nowadays, though, that sort of theory has changed, and now what Pops really is a way for orchestras to serve a larger part of the community, because we realize that not everyone is going to be a classical music lover, and that's okay. The great thing about the orchestra is that it is one of the most flexible ensembles on the planet and can perform in any genre and enhance any style of music. So the purpose of it now is to reach other parts of the community and serve people who may not want to, you know, be a part of the classical music scene, but still have an appreciation for the arts and cool collaborations. And that is what we can do with an orchestra on the Pops.
And there's something different when a full orchestra plays. I don't care what they're playing. And if you see it live in person and it fills the room, particularly in a vibrant room like the Sagerstrom here, I was blown away. I got invited to hear our thing with Arturo Sandoval through the generosity of the Hispanic Chamber here, where they had a fundraiser or a mixer or whatever. And I was blown away. You're having a ball. You're playing the trumpet. He's playing the trumpet. They're telling jokes. People are dancing, getting up. This wasn't what I thought my father's or grandfather's symphony was supposed to look like.
It is not that. That's
we know it's work behind the scenes and all the work you have to put into putting it together, but you're having a ball up there, it looks like.
Really?
I mean, almost like every performance is maybe a little different.
I'm telling you, if you've never 100%. Seen a symphony orchestra perform, particularly a whole mixture. I was going to come up with some crazy term here. A mixture of modern and classical music and of style that you've never seen. Go see this. I wish I'd taken my 10-year-old grandson to it. You know, he would have rolled his eyes and said, the symphony. I'm not going to the symphony here. He would have had a ball. I'm telling you, what you guys are doing is spectacular.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, on the Pops, it's more about just having a good time. The orchestra serving the community to just celebrate great music and legends of different genres and icons of different styles. We were talking a little bit before the show about this summer and how we're doing a disco show that I wrote called Disco Fever.
A disco show. How cool. I got to be at that one. When is that one coming up?
So August 23rd.
Okay.
And it's all the greatest hits from the 70s, from the Bee Gees, Gloria Gaynor, Donna Summer, all the icons. There'll be an onstage dance competition. Audience members are encouraged to dress up, have a good time because it's outdoors. So, bring the family, dance.
You're doing it outdoors. You're not doing in the...
Correct. It's not at Segerstrom. It's part of our summer fest, which happens outdoors.
So out in the courtyard.
Doing it at the Great Park or something?
At Great Park.
Oh, Great Park.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So we do several shows out there, including one of the Star Wars films in concert. Oh, we're doing some classical, a little bit of everything. The one I'm doing, though, is this disco show, and it is just a blast. It's all about having a good time dancing, singing, and... definitely not your grandfather's symphony concert. <for sure.
laughs> When you mentioned Detroit, Paul was raising his fist.
I'm from Detroit.
He's from
Motown.
Detroit,
do you ever incorporate? You must then bring in Motown elements.
We've done a lot of Motown shows there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just so much fun. I mean, Motor City is a great place to make music because it is so storied and so much history from the recording scene that happened there, not only in the 60s and 70s, but beyond. And
do you find other crazy clever? You mentioned klezmer music. I have a friend who's a professional musician. He's plays prog rock in a pretty successful band. And he loves klezmer music. Yeah. I don't even know what it's like. It's like Jewish folk with...
Yeah, exactly.
And don't they play with what?
Well, I mean...
Do they play with kazoo? No.
The ensemble, a lot of different historic instruments. I mean, clarinet is one of the most predominant instruments. Yes. And then drums, of course, and other instruments.
Right.
My mom actually runs the San Diego Jewish Men's Choir. And so that was why that was a big part of my musical upbringing, was playing with her. And I've recorded with them on several of their albums that they released early on in their time.
We do a show with a guy named Barry Sawitz, who owns hundreds of apartments here, wealthy guy, done commercial real estate. And apparently his father and their development company years ago did a thing with the Pacific Symphony, the four Jewish tenors instead of the four Irish tenors.
There you go.
Yeah. And they were singing a lot of that kind of stuff.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Well, I learned something today.
There you go.
Yeah.
So from Paul. I learned something from Paul.
that's unusual.
Do you try and come up with
really unusual, eclectic, I mean, disco, I would never think of that in a symphony here, or klezmer music, or any of these other things that I wouldn't think I'd find in a symphony hall.
I mean, that is my goal, is to find new collaborations, to create new sort of genre-bending opportunities
that's what we're doing
for artists to, and for the community to have a good time.
Absolutely.
And witness the orchestra doing something unusual and creative and fun that you wouldn't typically expect.
Yeah. Well, you talked about the Radio Shell. I mean, we got to go down and see Luis Fonsi there actually last September, which was really
amazing.
Cool. Great venue.
Yeah.
And you have some great stuff coming up. You had the disco event on August 23rd.
Right.
What's in for next season?
Yeah, so we just announced next season, which includes, so I mentioned the kickoff is Dolly Parton's symphony show, Threads. Mm-hmm. We do an annual holiday concert. This year will be a fantastic singer and pianist called Tony DeSere is doing all music of the Rat Pack for the holidays, which will be a lot of fun. And he's
a spectacular
piano singer.
Ain't love a kick in the head.
What a great choice. Yeah, I love that.
we also have shows like a Music of Journey show, so we'll be featuring all of their hits like Don't Stop Believin'. Right. We're doing a live semi-staged version of the Broadway show My Fair Lady in concert.
Okay.
Danny Elfman's great film scores will be brought to life with the symphonies. That's another thing that I think is so much fun. If you haven't heard film scores done live with orchestra,
it's like Oingo Boingo or something.
We got to hear the Star Wars with you. Actually.
That's right. Last season,
that was
our
awesome.
Kickoff.
Yeah.
And then one that I'm really excited about is the three Mexican tenors, which one of them is my father. So we're doing that show next season, which will be very special to me. The concert features on the first half traditional sort of three tenors repertoire, some opera, some Broadway. But then the second half focuses all on different styles of Mexican music, ranging from mariachi all the way up through Mexican pop stars like Luis Miguel, Juan Gabriel, and all the greats. So, that's
we
a really
rarely
fun one.
Pre-book shows that far out in advance, but you got to come back. Yeah. And bring your father.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to.
I want to hear him talk about this
Sounds great.
Journey.
I can do that.
That would
sure.
be awesome. Yeah. Very special.
Do people like your father sort of laugh at this or put it down, or is this a do the musicians embrace it? I mean, because they're playing what's arguably the most complex, difficult, that survived for centuries, and now they're going to go play Oingo Boingo, or they're going to go play disco or something.
I think what a lot of musicians... Well, first of all, the pops world has developed in such a way that now there are some really fantastic composers and arrangers writing very, I think, musically fulfilling arrangements mm-hmm. of these things. You know, early on, arranging for pops wasn't great. It was a lot of people trying to just take a keyboard part and sort of spread it out amongst the orchestra.
Right.
So it was a lot of long notes, and you were just kind of that synth bed behind.
Right.
But in something like a disco show, I mean, if you go back and listen, all of those original disco hits have great string charts and great string writing.
Because most of them aren't written for bassoon.
No. And same thing with Motown. I mean, that is all music that had these incredible backup bands with full brass section or string section. So now I think a lot of people are making an effort to really highlight that and actually expand upon it so that it's one very fulfilling for the musicians to play and then brings to life even newer, more imaginative arrangements from what we heard on the radio to the orchestra live, which makes it really special and unique.
Oh, that is awesome.
How cool is that?
That's
all right.
Very cool.
Well, I got to put a shout out to it. I went to it. I was blown away. You're a lot of fun. The group's a lot of fun. It's a fun venue and a whole different way to experience a symphony, which is a spectacular thing to see anyway, even though I don't go. I appreciate the fullness. How many pieces in a symphony? 30, 40, 50?
Oh, no, 80. 80. 80 okay. or so. Yeah, I mean, depending on the show and how many people we can fit physically on stage. You know, we pack it in. you get your money's worth.
You get your money's worth. It's a big sound. Yeah, we're just used to amplified 4 or 5 piece or 10 piece or something or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah,
and we're blessed to have just an amazing facility here, right?
Incredible.
It's gorgeous. And just the... I mean, we got to do, and Pacific Symphony was one of our awardees for our Estrella Awards this past year. Because, I mean, being a great partner, and you know, and so we're all in when it comes to highlighting what you guys do and, you know, supporting what you guys do, and because you guys support us
I appreciate that.
Well. So it's a great partnership, and we want to continue that and continue anytime you're back in town. We'd love to have you here. Like Paul said,
bring dad
or your mom, maybe too, because don't forget mom.
But
this was just fantastic, learning about what you're doing, what your background was or is. The fact that we both went to UCLA is kind of cool as well, but especially in Orange County sometimes. There's guys from the other side.
Oh, the other side.
That's right.
But we're at UCI. So.
So how do they find out more? Where do they get the schedule? Where do they buy tickets? Where do they see the lineup?
Yeah, everything is available on pacificsymphony.org. So you just head there and you can check out all of the current concerts for this weekend. You can see Summerfest, which is all of those summer parks concerts that we're doing outside, and the classical and pop series for next season are also online. You can sign up for any of those concerts, and we can see you dancing disco or the Macarena or, you know, just having a good time singing your hearts out some concert near you.
Do you ever do things with original pieces? Like, is that part of the regular symphony repertoire, not necessarily the pop symphony, where somebody creates some, I don't know, I always think of John Cage or something really oddball or something here, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the symphony is constantly premiering new works, both in classical and on the pop side. We're often premiering new arrangements, obviously, with the actual artists themselves when they come. So next season, a dear friend of mine, Ben Rector, who was here on the Ben and Cody show last season, he's a fantastic singer-songwriter that, you know, is touring right now and playing all these major arenas. He's premiering a brand new show, and we're going to be one of the first orchestras to do it on the pop series.
See, there you go.
It's in celebration of the America 250th anniversary. And it's all these new songs that he's written while on the road about the different cities and states that he's toured, paired with then some of his major hit songs. So you'll get to hear some brand new arrangements that no other audiences have heard, and that'll be next February.
And I'm hoping that I can hear the forgotten trumpet mastery of Reuben Franco. The lost files of Ruben Franco. I think he's got some he's going to bring out for you.
That's not going to happen. But, you know, I have thought about getting up with our mariachi band that we have once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, at some of our events.
See?
Well, the Three Tenors concert is going to have mariachi in it. So if you want to join them on stage, play some fourth trumpet or something.
If they play Ring of Fire, maybe. Like, Johnny Cash there as well. But that'd be great. Well, we want to thank you for joining us today. I mean, this has been
just my pleasure.
A lot of fun, and we do appreciate the partnership and what you've brought to the energy you've brought to Orange County, being our new Pops conductor, being so young, because I know you're still in your early 30s, I think, which is it's kind of rare, right? Isn't that rare
I mean, you have to start somewhere. So, right. I mean, conductors start at some point.
At some point, right. But, you know.
But most of the people out there are a little bit older than I am, I guess.
I was going to say, So that's fantastic. It's great to see that. And I know we were very excited when you joined here about a year ago now, right?
This will be the end of my second season. Yeah, so it's a couple of years now.
Has it been 2 years?
It has.
Oh, my gosh. I keep losing track of time. Ever since COVID.
Like, so it happens when we get old.
Yeah, I know. That too. Oh, it's been 2 years. That's fantastic.
That's right.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
We appreciate you being here and being here in the community as well. And we look forward to what happens this weekend, too.
Thank you. It'll be a lot of fun. I hope you're all there and ready with your dancing shoes.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thanks,
Enrico.
So much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Well, there you have it. One more reason to tune in each and every time. You never know what you're going to hear or learn as we take a look at our community. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Live Innovation Center.